You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. Welcome to West Hill on this beautiful, warm, sunny spring day. We keep whatever season in our hearts, so it doesn't matter what kind of weather we have out there. My name is Wei Zhao, and I'm privileged to assist in the gathering this morning. At the beginning of our gathering every Sunday, we acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and the Huron-Wendat First Nations. The first reading is taken from the book Paris, He Said, by Christine Sneed. There are so many ways of classifying our tendencies, but I think one of the most telling must be this. There are those of us who do not wrestle very often or for very long with our appetites, who can simply say enough and walk away. And those of us who are constantly at odds with how much we desire and what we actually allow ourselves. The gap between desire and restraint, here rages the river of discontent, one that threatens to overflow its banks. Offered as wisdom for our journey. The second piece is by D.S. Wright's from her novel, The Beast in Me. Focus. Such a little word for such a hard thing, and yet it can make things so simple, unless you break it, like glass. Fragile on certain points with enough pressure or carelessness, but if handled correctly, it's useful, clear, sharp, and perfect. That's what I will try to think about when the beast in me is not in agreement with what I'm doing or how I'm behaving, when it threatens to break free through that very same glass that separates us. I need to be exactly like this window, smooth, cool, strong, and impenetrable. Focus. Offered as wisdom for the journey. The last piece is by Jerry Mueller from the book The Mind and the Market, Capitalism in Western Thought. The book is about Edmund Burke, who was a conservative philosopher of the 18th century. For Burke, almost everything that makes life worthwhile is the result of society, its inherited codes, knowledge, and institutions. These goods are fragile, and when they are destroyed, the result is human misery. Among the greatest of man's needs, according to Burke, was the need for society and government to provide a sufficient restraint upon their passions. As far back as his Vindication of Natural Society, Burke had argued that the destruction of inherited institutions and cultural practices would result not in natural harmony, but in barbarism. For Burke, as for Adam Smith, man is preeminently social man who realizes himself morally only under the tutelage of society, offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
Today is focusing on the 2005 movie Brokeback Mountain. And those of you who have seen it will know that there is a shirt that is stained that holds a significant meaning in the movie toward the end. So that's really what inspired the focus moment today, is the idea of stains and how we are stained by so much in life. I once read Langston Hughes, heard in his poetry an isolated grief that bound his heart and forced its flow to stain the world with joy. I once walked distant cliffs, a faraway shore, saw dolphins, mum and calf, swim side by side, the salt-stained coast, the limit of their pleasure. I once saw fingerprints, stains upon polished wood, a child's wondering eyes lifted to see what wasn't there and what might yet be gained. Our minds are overstained with what we have known. Memory waiting there for a moment's insight to take us back to what was there and what it made in us. Before I start, I just want to let people know I accidentally took some medication this morning that I usually take after church, and so my mouth is so dry, it's driving me crazy. So I might make you actually give that, or I'm going to go back here every now and then and get a Tic Tac, so anyhow. Brokeback Mountain. You can't ever really see a movie cleanly if you know kind of what it's about. If you go into the theater with an idea of what it is, you don't see those opening scenes without something going through your head about what's going to happen. And that happened with Brokeback, with me. I knew it was known as the gay cowboy movie, so I knew that the two men who first find themselves together silently in this parking lot waiting to ask for a job for the summer, you kind of know that something's going to happen between them. You don't get to just watch that without the influence of all that impact on you. But I didn't know enough about the movie to restrain me from downloading it on my tablet to watch on the plane on my way to Arizona a week and a half ago. So there I am, my tablet on the tablette in the center seat. And Brokeback Mountain. Yep. It was this person engaged herself. This person spent the entire flight looking out the window, and it was pitch black. So I don't recommend you watch it on an airplane. But it was a deeply moving picture. It was a deeply moving story of what life does to us. Not just to two people who fell in love with one another, but what it does to us when we are stained by the many different memories that make us as children, that find their way into our brains, that tell us who we are and what we can never be, and so prescribe our way forward in some incomprehensible, unforeseen way in our future. Many of you know that I wanted to be a nuclear physicist when I grew up. But before that, I wanted to be an engineer because my dad was an engineer. So in grade 9, I applied to take drafting. And I wasn't allowed to because I was a girl. Just those kinds of little things. And you can take it back to a child who's 3 who comes tripping down the stairs and does a little dance for mom and dad. And mom and dad look at that little girl and go, "You are such a lovely dancer," and that becomes the thing that focuses a child who had before been working with Lego years before her siblings, putting together trucks and bridges and buildings. But the praise was for the dancer, and so the dancer got to be. Our lives are stained in so many different ways. Sometimes with beautiful hues that have brought out things in us that we would never have imagined, but often too in ways that bruise and bind us and keep us constrained by the restraints that have been put upon us. The readings that Wei so beautifully shared with you this morning are fairly diverse, but to go back to the movie, let's watch a trailer. Almost blew past that, Peter. Thank you. We'll watch the trailer. I think it's approved for airline audiences.
If you're looking for work, I suggest you get in here pronto.
Well, since we're going to be working together, I reckon it's time we start drinking together.
Woo-wee! Yeah!
It's nobody's business but ours.
Fishing buddies.
You know, it could be like this, just like this always.
This thing grabs hold of us in the wrong place, and we're dead.
Boys sure found a way to make the time pass up there.
You don't go up there to fish.
You don't know nothing about it.
have no idea how bad it gets.
If you can't fix it, you got a standard.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Thank you, Peter. So I'm going to go back to the readings in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit more about the movie as well before I do that. In the movie, they meet, they get this summer job to take this huge herd of sheep up to the mountain and keep them up there for the summer. And the idea is that one of them keeps camp and the other one goes up and spends the night with the sheep so that the coyotes don't get them. Apparently they'd lost almost half of the herd the year before, so he was really counting on these two doing what they needed to do. But of course they fall in love with each other, and fall is the exact word, because they don't see it coming, they don't expect it, but their friendship crosses that line into a deep and intense and riveting love. And so they end up back down the mountain, not knowing how to pick up their normal lives, not knowing how to go about the things that they were supposed to do. Ennis is already engaged to be married that year, and Jack is a rodeo rider who has a life of his own and a ranch back home, a struggling ranch with his mom and dad. So they go about their lives, and for 4 years they don't see one another. And then Jack sends a postcard to Ennis and suggests that he come and see him. And Ennis immediately writes back saying that he's up for it. And they come together, and Ennis's wife is just watching them, and they hug each other. And then that whole reality of who they are and what they have meant to each other overwhelms them, and they are suddenly embracing in a way that is clearly not just two fishing guys who spent a lot of time together. And so Ennis's wife knows almost immediately that there is an intensity to that relationship that she doesn't experience in her relationship with them. So to go to the readings now, the reading that talked about Edmund Burke and his idea of society is so similar, I think, to some of our classic understandings of what it is that we lay down as our morality and how we manage to navigate life together with so many different things going on that left unchecked would probably tear us all apart. He believed that he had this idea of humans as just animals, as many have understood us to be down through the ages, and that if we place upon ourselves certain constraints, that they would keep us from acting in ways that would destroy civilization, destroy society. And so having a very rigid understanding of what was appropriate and what was not would keep us from falling apart, would keep us from being at each other's throats, would keep us from destroying the decorum of society and the household. And when we go back down through many of our religious proscriptions, the things that we weren't supposed to do, so many of them are tied in with that exact same idea, that if something was going to perhaps undermine the health and the welfare of the community, then it had to be negated. It had to not be undertaken. It had to so be such a risk that it was prohibited. And in most religious systems, it was so dangerous that it was then conferred upon God as one of the constraints that God announced. So it was God who said that this was unacceptable. It was God who said that we couldn't act in this way. It was God who was taking care of our society by saying, don't do that. And so the whole shame and horror of homosexuality was bred deeply in our religious systems because long, long ago, it may have threatened community in some way. It may have kept people from, I don't know, procreating or something regularly. It was considered to be dangerous to human society. And so it was prescribed by God. as we began to lift some of that proscription off it, as we began to see, as the quote from Winston Churchill noted, that the worst vision of a society is a civilization stripped of its compassion. If you are just having all the stuff that Burke says laid down, and you live by that without any sense of interpretation, without any movement or options for something different, it becomes this hard, hard thing. And the reading from Dee's book, I can't remember her last name right now, about the glass, you know, you get to the point where you and what it is that you would live like are on two different sides of the glass, and you can't make your way through without breaking it and harming yourself and those around you. And so Ennis, who as a young boy was taken by his father to see the corpse of a brutally murdered gay man, and who isn't even sure if his father wasn't the one who did that, who killed that man, that early imprint on his mind, whether he was prepubescent or not, created for him this hard, hard glass through which he could see what love was like, but he couldn't permit himself to live there. And Jack, who came from this, you know, kind of not quite making it ranch, with a father who I believe seemed to be one who condemned him, but a mother who loved, in the words that aren't even said in the movie, you could see that there was a love there regardless. That glass didn't exist in the same way in Jack's life as it did in Ennis's life, but that the whole of the story together created such a distance between what might have been and what was. So after the 4 years apart, they decide that they're going to see each other fairly regularly, and they do. They get together. They go up Brokeback Mountain, a place where they had fallen in love, and they, for 20 years, maintain a relationship that holds them together, that allows them to live the lives that they live. Ennis's family splits up. His wife, who knows what's going on, still doesn't confront him until later on, actually speaks after she's remarried, speaks about some of the realities, and there's a crushing scene where that comes to the fore, and where Ennis doesn't want, even in that moment, to acknowledge what it is that happened and continues to happen in his life. And then the excruciatingly painful final scenes when he goes to see Jack's parents in the ranch, that Jack kept telling his parents, this guy named Ennis Del Mar is going to come up with me. We're going to whip this place into shape. And visits the bedroom that Jack grew up in, a small space that framed the way he became, as all of our bedrooms do, all of our houses, our families do. They frame who we become. And he leaves that place holding those stains in a literal way and understanding the losses that he has experienced. So the movie is like so many movies that show us how we are circumscribed by our circumstances, wrapped up in ways that we would let go if we possibly could, if we even knew that we were bound in those ways. The ways that keep us from being as filled with love or as responsive as we choose to be in our immediate relationships, that keep us from being honest about how it is we feel about the way someone has acted, because we know that we will be judged for that. The realities that keep us from actually sharing the fullness of who we are beyond the most intimate relationships we have, because we're afraid that others will mock or laugh or deride or hate us. And so we live in these circumscribed worlds. It's kind of like when we're born and we could all speak Korean or Inuvialuit or whatever language we were born with, because our brains were capable of it. And then as we learn to speak a certain language and we don't bother with those other neural pathways, we lose the ability. And after you're 10, trying to learn another language is no longer a walk in the park. It's a difficult chore. And so it is that all of those neural pathways that are available to us as infants that might have allowed us all to be nuclear physicists, who knows, that may have helped someone cure cancer already decades ago if they hadn't become a dancer. Our pathways are so dependent upon the stains that they receive in our lives, the stains that keep us from doing what we might have done, that allow us to do what we do. And that once set, it's rare that we can ever take them out, that we can ever remove them, that we can ever live a life we might have lived. And so Ennis, deprived of his family, really, and his lover, finds a trailer. He ends up in a trailer in this, like, narrowing life, living in that quiet, silent way that he has always lived. In the first few scenes of the movie, when Jack asks him a few questions and manages to get a couple of answers, he says, you don't say very much. Is that all you've said the whole time we've been up here? And he goes, that's all I've said the last year, or something like that. He doesn't talk at all because he's so silenced by the realities of who he is. His parents died when he was young or were not able to care for him, and he was brought up by his siblings. And that, perhaps, is one of the things that stained him most, so he wasn't able to talk about his emotions, who he was, how he wanted to live. Who knows what the stains were? One of the most impressive things that came out of this movie, though, that I came across, was that the magazine Christianity Today reviewed the movie. And it actually, as someone on Patheos noted, they reviewed the movie. They didn't condemn the movie. They reviewed it. And put out, instead of just speaking about the movie, put out a number of questions for its readership to engage, which was brilliant. And I think probably one of the first times that Christianity Today had engaged one of those very volatile subjects in its own constituency. But it asked things like, the byline of the movie is, love is a force of nature. So it asked, is love a force of nature? Is it something that we can control or not? Is it something that we have to fall into it if we're falling into it? Is there control there? It doesn't answer it in the review, but that's a question. Is it a force of nature? Is it, even if we talk about those stains that mitigate our neural pathways, is that not a force of nature? Then somehow that we have limited how our brains develop, and so we fall into love in certain ways because that's how our mind has been formed to allow us to fall in love. There were questions about whether or not the silence with which Ennis had grown up, if his own silence is maybe what created the way that the story unfolded. Did they fall in love and then become lovers? Or were they gay lovers and then they fell in love? There were questions like that they put out to their communities. I think a rich, rich conversation that could have taken place. Unfortunately, I'm not subscribed to Christianity Today, so I couldn't read the comments, which is probably good. But I was just impressed to see that they engaged the movie in the way that they did. We like to think that we live in an accepting and permissive society, that we wouldn't hold it against someone, what they believe or where they work or what their level of education or their sexuality or gender, that we wouldn't worry about that it wouldn't come between us and falling in love, or at least it wouldn't come between us and being in relationship. Each week we talk about the interconnectedness of life and how it is that we choose to fall into a place where love can be lived out, no matter what. I'm not sure we do that as fully as we would like. not sure we aren't held back by our stains. I'm not sure that we give ourselves the opportunities that we might take. Were we not constrained by what society, how society and our families have stained us, or restrained by our own understandings of what that might be. So I take this movie to be an invitation to move beyond the glass, whatever it is, whatever we find it is that might keep us from the fullness we need in our relationships, from the conversations that might break through into a new way of being together in our communities, here, in the work that we do, in the possibilities for the future. We can't be constrained by what we think is right. We have to live our way forward to what we find is right and then be willing to live it. If you haven't seen this movie, I invite you to do so, to see and feel constraint and what it does to two people who love each other so incredibly deeply. Thank you. Stained by memories that take us back to what was there. And we must find a way to live beyond the stains that circumscribe us, to find the ways to new conversations, new challenges, new opportunities, to find the courage to walk into them, to speak into them, to love into them. This is the challenge that is ours each and every day. May we embrace it with courage and with hope. Go from this place in peace.
Listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.